We've heard a lot of numbers during this pandemic, but let's take a moment to pause and think about one in particular, 167,000. That's how many kids in the U.S. have lost at least one parent or primary caregiver to COVID-19. In a moment, we'll hear from one family who stepped up to care for their orphaned cousins last year. But first, let's bring in Charles Nelson. He's a professor of pediatrics and psychiatry at Harvard University. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
The losses for these children in this country and around the world are so profound that you're among those who have coined the term COVID orphans, and you've said it's like a hidden cost of this pandemic. No one's really talking about it. Tell us more.
So I think front and center, of course, our concerns have been with people who are getting ill or who are dying. But it turns out that one in four deaths of adults is accompanied by a child who's then been orphaned or left without a parent or grandparent caregiver.
And we're reading that grieving kids can face some pretty serious risks, starting with so many psychological issues. Can you tell us about some of those issues that you're seeing for kids whose parents have died of COVID-19?
One concern, of course, is that grief manifests itself differently in young children than it does in adults. Certainly kids will be experiencing anxiety and, if they're old enough, probably depression. But then there are secondary and tertiary effects. So some children might act out, and teachers might see that in the classroom. Then there can be the casualty of the loss of health insurance or food scarcity, which then leads to increased stress in kids. And that stress can take both the psychological and a biological toll on children. So I think we need to think about this as sort of a cascade of the many things that can really conspire to pull the rug out from underneath these kids.
You've used the term biologically embedded. Those are some of the physical consequences. Can you say more about that?
Sure. So if we think of stress, for example, we all know what stress feels like psychologically, but biologically, what happens is that the brain starts to produce various stress hormones, and these hormones, if they're chronically elevated, can actually do harm to the brain. In addition, they can do harm to the body, and they can elevate the risk of physical illnesses as well as psychological ailments. If children are grieving the loss of their parents, and if that grief is not recognized and it's not treated, short-term effects can become long-term effects.
Of course, when parents die, there are also some more immediate concerns like who is going to raise and care for the child. Can you talk about what children need from adults immediately after this kind of tragedy?
Sure. They're going to need lots of support and a feeling of safety. These children are going to feel as though the world has been turned upside down. They need an adult who's there for them all the time. Ideally would be a family member, but teachers will play a role, clergy can play a role, neighbors can play a role, relatives can play a role. What we need is a safety net that gets put into place immediately so that that child is really being protected by adults. And that needs to continue until the child seems to have gotten on the other side and started to resolve this grief.
You've been critical of government, saying that local, state, and federal officials have been silent on this issue of COVID orphans. What should they be doing when we're thinking in the context of what you say is a safety net?
Sure. So I don't really fault municipalities and governments as much as wanting them to pay attention to this problem. The first step is for them to recognize that this is an issue that they have to pay attention to. Then it's a matter of who should be responsible. Someone needs to step up. Is it a child protection authority, for example? Is it neighborhood associations? I mean, so if the child needs counseling, for example, or possibly even medication, are there people there that the child can see quickly and not have to wait 2 months to get help?
You know, you touched on this when I asked you what adults can do, but what can a child's community, friends, extended family do to help a child who is going through this kind of loss?
So I think they need to basically be there to hold that child's hand. They need to reassure that child that things will get better. They need to make sure that material supports are there, like, again, food and shelter and things like that. And they basically need to be available 24/7. Anytime that child cries out for help or shows any sign of needing help, the adult needs to be available. Because if too much time goes by and the child's needs are not attended to, that feeling of abandonment is just going to get overwhelming for that child. We need to put in place a whole series of things just in case one line of defense doesn't work, that there's a backup. It could be teachers. It could be the parents of friends. It could be the school social worker or school psychologist. But I think we need to set up a whole community of care providers for the child.
That's Dr. Charles Nelson, professor of pediatrics at Harvard University. Doctor, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Let's turn now to Cornelius and Melanie Daniel, a Georgia family already the parents of three young children when they adopted their two teenaged cousins last summer. This after the teens' parents died of COVID-19 within 24 hours of each other back in July. I spoke with them by Zoom and asked Cornelius to tell us about his uncle, Martin Daniel, who was 53 years old when he died, and his aunt Trina, only 49.
So my uncle was a very inquisitive guy, very witty fellow. He and I both, and Melanie, all graduated from Tuskegee. He inspired us all. He was a chemist, which kind of inspired my love for science. And so when he would come home, we would do experiments. And he was a great guy, great guy.
A role model.
Absolutely.
We know that your uncle Martin and wife Trina both died of COVID-19, and also that their children, now your children, 18-year-old Miles and 15-year-old Marina, got COVID as well. Can you share with us what happened?
So we were all together in May for Miles' graduation. So Miles graduated from high school in May. And so I got a call on July 6th from my wife, Melanie, saying, hey, my uncle Martin had passed away. I said, what happened? And she said, I think it's COVID. My dad had received a call from my aunt Trina. She had left him a voicemail, and you could tell in the voicemail that she had labored breathing, and you know she wasn't doing very well herself. Mm. But my uncle was already deceased at the house.
Oh wow!
And then shortly after that, my aunt was taken to the hospital, where she collapsed. They resuscitated her once, and then she collapsed again, and they could not resuscitate her. Okay, and so after that, Miles and Marina was both also COVID positive, and they were under quarantine in the home where they found their father and their mother sick. Miles turned 18 the Sunday after his parents passed away. And so it's been a long journey. Recently, they lost their grandmother as well. Mm. Within the same week of losing their grandmother, they had to celebrate their mother's birthday. But with God's grace and a lot of family support, we've been able to sustain ourselves.
Melanie, I want to talk to you. I want to bring you in here. This is something that so many families are going through right now, losing both, and all of those milestones that we take for granted, like turning 18 and graduating from high school. How are you trying to ease that grief and help these teenagers deal with that trauma?
To be completely honest, we take it one day at a time. I've even said to Marina, some days when we can't take it a day at a time, we take an hour at a time, and ensuring that there's positive reinforcement throughout the days, the months, and hopefully the years to come.
How are you two doing it? You're trying to make things as normal as possible for these children, but you're also grieving.
We put ourselves on the back burner. For one, we're not the only family experiencing this. This is bigger than us, and God has given us a bigger purpose. We stepped into that moment and walked into it with that focus, making sure these young people have the opportunities they need to move forward in life. Then we have done our jobs.
We just spoke to a psychiatrist and researcher. He was thinking a lot about whether the government has done enough to help families like yours. And you told us that you recently wrote to your senators, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. What did you tell them?
I asked about legislation to provide provisions for families who have taken in COVID survivors and the children of COVID victims. I asked about educational benefits. More importantly, I asked about mental health and healthcare benefits for these families. You know, these families have now had to adjust. It hadn't been easy.
Yeah.
I'll be completely honest with you. And with the resources we have, we've extended open arms to our cousins. A lot of folks don't really have a lot of those resources. My concern is that so many of these young folks, the worst place to leave them is in a dark hole where they can't have the opportunity to talk to grief counselors, to talk to mental health professionals, and to not have so many loopholes and red tape to provide those services. A lot of that we've had to fund on our own.
Have you heard from them yet?
I have not. Mm. I was told to give it about 5 days or so, and then we'll follow up.
Melanie, We know that your Uncle Martin and his wife Trina were not yet vaccinated. One of the more heartbreaking parts of this story as well is that they were hesitant, but they had finally scheduled their first doses when they got COVID-19. Does that frustrate you or perhaps make you a stronger advocate for vaccines?
It doesn't really frustrate me simply because I know that everything happens for a reason. I have a strong spiritual belief, but it does make me a stronger advocate for being vaccinated because without putting in the works, then our faith means nothing. So we have to make sure that we at least take the precautions that are out there to protect ourselves.
Well, Cornelius and Melanie, I thank you both for speaking to us, for sharing your story. Our deepest condolences to you and your family, and we wish you the best.
Thank you so much, Tanya, for the opportunity to share our story.
Thank you.